Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hour two of Deprogram. How you feeling out there? This is Michael Parker, and it is 9:04 here on the west coast of the United States of America on planet Earth's third stone from the sun, to phrase Jimi Hendrix. I'm going to be joined in just a second by my buddy Hrvoje Moritz. We're going to talk about all the current events and check in on him. And before we get to that, I've got another interesting article. Now, this is emblematic to me of the Biden administration. So yesterday I read this article, and the title of it is U.S. to drastically reduce nicotine content in cigarettes, as if, all the things that are happening in the world right now, this is another one of the things he wants to focus on. It says, President Joe Biden's administration is set to announce a new policy requiring cigarette producers to reduce nicotine to non-addictive levels, a move that would deal a powerful blow to the tobacco industry. And okay, so I'm not saying I'm pro cigarettes, that you should smoke cigarettes. I'm asking you to think about this in the larger realm. Okay, as the world burns and things are going straight to hell in a handbasket, as they say, we're going to focus on talking to industries like the energy industry or the smoking industry. This is what Biden does. Instead of like doing his job, he points fingers at industries and makes them clean up their act. Nicotine is responsible for 480,000 deaths a year in this country, supposedly, according to the CDC. And 13.7% of all U.S. adults are current cigarette smokers, according to the same CDC data. So Joe Biden has made this, and this is ridiculous, this quote right here. It says, Biden has made a cancer moonshot a centerpiece of his agenda, and nicotine reduction policy would fit into its goals at minimal cost. Now, the people, of course, who are in the smoking industry, the Philip Morrises of the world and such, they're not going to take this lying down. This was initially reported in Wall Street Journal, and then I happened to see it on Yahoo. Why it was on Yahoo, I have no idea, but that's where I saw it. Anyway, so the people in the smoking industry are saying, well, listen, okay, so if we reduce the nicotine, what if people just start smoking more? So, this is one of those things here again where, you need to clean up your act over there and do something and change this and potentially lose business and put people out of work for a purpose that we don't even know if it's even going to work. And I don't know, this caught me as being, like I say, emblematic of the Biden administration. Instead of doing your job, you're going to pick on other industries and tell people to fix things. Now, I was on Joseph Arthur's show last night, and we were talking about this as well. And one of the things that's interesting as well about nicotine and cigarettes, and if you haven't heard this yet, you may think it's crazy, but this is out there. It seems like, okay, when COVID kicked off in early 2020, I was told by law enforcement, a person that I work with on Jim Breslow's show, she knew that I knew about COVID, and we were talking about various things in order to prepare for the toilet paper runs and all the things that were about to ensue if you were paying attention and could see far ahead. And she said, Michael, she said, get some nicotine patches. And that's what we're telling people to do. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And why? And she said, it's because we believe that it will help fight off the cytokine storm if you get COVID. I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So I just throw that out there, because what's in these nicotine patches? Well, nicotine. And so now we want people to not smoke anymore. And weirdly enough, it appears that a lot of cigarette smokers didn't get COVID with the level of regularity that you would think that a person putting particulate matter into their lungs would. So the whole thing is very, very odd. Joseph kind of pointed that out during his show, and I was like, yep, that's true as well. But my main thing is, it's just like, of all the issues that we have right now, the economy is absolutely in the crapper. Oil prices, gasoline prices through the roof, instability in Europe, and we're going to worry about cigarettes. But that's just me. This is TNT. We'll be right back with Hrvoje Moritz.
Stay up to date on the latest news.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
One of the best things about working at TNT and doing this kind of work is you meet people that you become friends with. And even though we've never met in person, we have met via the internet several times. And I got to say, love this guy. Hrvoje Morić, he also hosts a show here on TNT in the afternoons. Hrvoje is a Geneva School of Diplomacy graduate, a former professor of international relations, a proud Croatian American Mexican, and founder of the Geopolitics and Empire podcast, which is excellent, and you need to check it out. With the assistance of experts from around the world, he seeks to critically analyze global affairs and is devoted to the examination of the perilous truths of our time. He is a fellow truth seeker, a free thinker, my kind of people. Good morning, Hrvoje.
Good morning. How's it going?
It's going good, brother. And so it's 11 a.m. for you in Mexico, correct?
That's correct.
You got a little bit of time. The one thing about doing TNT, I love the job, but like, I'll be honest, in a full disclosure, I'm not really a morning guy. So this is taking some getting used to on my part. I get a little bit smarter as the day goes on, but with the aid of caffeine, I'm trying to pull it together.
I'm not a morning guy either. I actually got up not too long ago, so I got my coffee ready to roll. So,
well, thank you for doing this for me today. And so I don't know if you've heard some of these crazy stories that I've been reporting. So one of the first things that I just want to run this by you. So this morning, one of the first things that I read when I'm looking for things that I want to point out today is that, you know, all of a sudden we've got a polio scare in London. So this polio virus has been found in the sewer, and weirdly enough, it's the vaccine induced polio virus. And now, it's the front page, taught right in the center of the Drudge Report today, which is a huge news aggregator. I don't go to it as much as I used to, but I do go to it occasionally just to see what's on people's mind. And right there in the center, everybody get freaked out again. You know, it's not enough that we had COVID or the recently reemergent monkeypox, but now we've got polio in the sewers of London that we need to be worried about.
Actually, I saw that this morning. You know, when I wake up, I'll look at my feed through my smartphone, and I primarily use Telegram as well as Twitter. Yes. There's a great channel I like called Stop Common Pass on Telegram and Twitter, and I found the article, the story you're talking about, although from the Telegraph. And yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous because I can't find exactly where it is, but in the article, it's talking about how it's a vaccine-induced polio. So therefore, you should take, you know, the vaccine against polio. Like, what? Are you crazy? Like, so you want me to take the thing that caused the problem? Like, and that they specifically that they wanted to invite parents of under 5-year-old kids. I'm like, if I was a parent of a, you know, I would not even open my door. I'd say, get out of my face. So it's ridiculous.
I brought it up today, and listen, I'm not making light of polio. I when I was a kid, I knew someone who suffered from it. So I'm not making light of that. What I'm just saying is, it's like, I'm pointing out what you're pointing out, which is that this particular strain that they're finding in the sewers of London. Well, let me just say two things. And I said this in my little segment in the beginning is, first of all, I as a layperson who is not a medical professional, I would just think that you could find virtually anything in a sewer, right? Especially in a major urban area like London, because that should be the ultimate receptacle of anything that's going through humans, right? So that makes you think, well, wait a minute, how often is it that they find polio in the sewers? And they said, hey, you know what? We find a few cases of this every year. And even this particular strain, which is, interestingly enough, the vaccine-induced strain. So I don't know. It just seems like a continued kaleidoscope of chaos and catastrophism. I can't even speak this morning, but you know what I'm saying. Just a continual fear carousel.
Yeah, I was chatting with Charles Coves of he's got a show on TNT every Saturday. Yesterday, we were talking about this, as well as James Roguski on my show earlier this week, who's really delving into this FDA Pfizer fraud and how they want to inject kids now with the COVID vaccine, which and they're lying with all of their data as well. Like he's clearly shows and explains how they're lying with their data, but. I mean, I have no qualms of saying, yeah, I just don't like vaccines anymore, ever. I don't want to take any. And it's like, well, since when does health come from a needle? You know, it's like health is getting rid of toxins, eating well, exercising, stress, all of that great stuff. I don't need to be injected with needles. And I don't believe I need to be an expert to decide what happens with my body, you know. And today it's, but that's that technocracy and scientific dictatorship they're putting upon us, that you could only, you only must listen to the technocrats, the experts, the lab coats. They will tell you what to think. You don't think for yourself. You just obey. And I'm done with that. I hope more and more people are done with that, and everyone start acting, taking back their own agency, right? So yeah.
No, amen, brother. I hear you. It's like, because sometimes you have to, you know, I don't even like having to explain myself or feel like I'm, you know, having to qualify things, but I do feel like saying, you know, listen, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just want some common sense. But at the same time, having said that, what you just said makes great sense. And it's like, at this point, I'm beginning to think, yeah, man, maybe I don't want. So last year, I did have the shingles vaccine, and I did it basically to make my dad happy, because my dad had a really bad case of shingles 2 years ago. And my doctor was trying to get me to get, you know, the COVID vaccine, the shingles vaccine. She wanted me to get a tetanus booster. And I said, listen, so here's what I'll do. Why don't we meet in the middle, and I'll get your shingles vaccine, and I'll pass on those other two. And she looks at me and she kind of laughs. She's a nice lady, but okay. So then they come in, they give me the shingles vaccine, and I'm rolling my sleeve back down or whatever. And they're saying, well, okay, come back in 2 months and we'll give you your other one. Or maybe it's 30 days. I was like, the other one? I'm like, you didn't tell me there was two of them. And anyway, it's just, I don't know. It's a great racket. A lot of money in vaccines.
That's the thing. And I think it was Paul Thomas. He's really great, the pediatrician. I think he's from Oregon. He's got his own show now. They took away his medical license. I think he's in the process of getting it back, but he published, I read his book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan. And I don't know if it was his book or someone else basically saying that the pediatricians or doctors or whatever, I guess it's more focused on pediatricians, but that they get most of their money from the vaccines, like 80%. That's the big money. And that's, again, so are they pushing it just for the money or for your health? To me, it seems like for the money. And yeah, he did that study. He had like over 1,000 kids in his practice, and he had parents who did the full 72 dose CDC vaccine protocol. Others, the second group, that did half of that protocol, and then the third group that did not vaccinate. If you look at that study, peer reviewed, clearly shows, clearly in the graph, that there's a giant difference between the unvaccinated kids and the vaccinated kids. The unvaccinated by far the healthiest, and the vaccinated kids had a slew of problems, some of them like permanent, you know, autoimmune, all sorts of crazy health issues. And so that for me is enough. And you know, they pulled his license right after he published that study. What does that you again? So anyways, yeah.
Well, Hervoye, when my daughters were very, very young, we had a pediatrician that we really liked. And I know this has happened to another host, and I won't say his name because maybe he didn't want to share this information, but because he asked me if this had happened to us, and it did. I mean, our pediatrician basically told us, like, listen, I can't be the doctor for your kids if you don't get this slew of vaccinations. And we did, you know, we did do what the law asked of us, but my wife and I, you know, we spread everything out as far as we could. So, you know, you've moved out of the US for good reason. We'll talk about that too in the second segment, but you know, we were in line with the law so that our kids could go to school, and that, you know, so that we could maintain the pediatrician. But, you know, we were basically bullied into this, and we were not really given a real choice about this. So when you don't give people a choice and you coerce people into things, yesterday I had a wonderful woman on who's the co-founder of Freedom Moms, and she's pushing back against this 866 bill that's being proposed here in California about basically, Hervoye, what they can do if this bill passes, it's, kids 15 and older will be able to get vaccinations of any kind without parents being notified here in the state of California.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, they're giving kids all of the, they're giving, you know, all of these kids agency in all of these places where they shouldn't, whereas in other places they deny them. And also what you did is what Paul Thomas recommended, which was a good thing, spreading out the vaccines. That mitigates, I think, a lot of things. So, yeah, it's like today the kid can decide their gender, but they can't, you know, own a drive a car, own a firearm, whatever, all of these things. So, yeah.
Hervoye, think about it, because I also have a friend who has a vaccine-injured child. And, you know, I don't think that he and his wife were aware. I mean, he is now. But, you know, initially they'll come in with a whole rack of vaccines. Oh, okay, we could do four or six today. You know, and my wife and I, just because like you, you know, I've been reading about all of these things for a long time. I'm fully vaccinated to the gills pretty much. But I was aware, I'm like, well, at the least that I can do for my child is to spread this out as much as I can. I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place, but this is the one thing that I can do, is just take the maximum amount of time between the vaccinations. And my friend, I guess, you know, they kind of surprised him and his wife one time and gave the child, I think, upwards of six shots one day. And she had immediate reactions. She's doing much better now. But anyway, I do, if anybody asks me, I just say, listen, you know, just try to space it out as much as you can at the very least.
Yeah, well, we had an experience recently. We had to renew all of our Mexican passports from the family and kids. And we visit a conventional pediatrician. They tell you to go like every 3 months. We don't even go. It's like, we don't need it. You know, like if your kid's sick, we try to deal with it. And if it's something worse, you know, then we go. I buck all of the trend that this is what they tell me to do. And so here the law is, when you get your kid's passport the first time, you need to present a letter from the pediatrician saying the kid is in good health. And then you need to include this letter with your passport application. And we asked our conventional pediatrician, hey, can you give us this letter? And the secretary is like, well, you also have to show us that the kid is fully vaccinated. And we're like, what? And then you have to wait like 3 months for the appointment. Like, what kind of pediatrician is this? You got to wait 3 months and we need it like now. And like, we're not doing this. And, you know, there's options. People just can find, there's plenty of other options. And my wife happens to be studying homeopathy. She's going to become a homeopath. And her professor is also a doctor with all of the credentials as a pediatrician and doctor and all of that. And he checks the kid and gives us the letter without requiring vaccines. And we take that and we get the passport, no problem. So you just have to, it's not easy, it's not convenient, but there are options. And, you know, you just got to try to find those alternative options.
That's so interesting. You're talking about, I was just in passport offices here in Los Angeles yesterday. My wife and I are traveling in September, going to Egypt. I have a fascination with archaeology and especially ancient civilizations. But so we were doing the whole passport thing, and, you know, it wasn't easy to get an appointment. We actually, and we kind of waited a little late, but we started trying to go through that process and just monitoring several different places that we could potentially go, waiting for cancellations. We finally get into one in Van Nuys, California yesterday, spent a couple of hours there, even though we had an appointment. But it's just interesting that we both have done that as of late.
Yeah, it's actually pretty quick here in Mexico, surprisingly. But in the U.S., it's like, it's. I mean, think about that. Americans become
right?
The third. I'm still waiting for my kid, because we're like double and triple citizens. My kid's U.S., it's been 2 months, and I still, they're supposed to be sending in the mail her U.S. passport. And like, where is it?
So. Wow. My kids are dual citizens as well, because my wife is Australian. And so my kids are dual citizens. And we didn't renew their passports this time. We still have to do that. But because of this trip that we're doing, we just wanted to take care of it right now. And it's a little bit of money, too, because we paid for the expedited versions. But yeah, we're not going to see these, even paying expedited. And this was several hundred bucks, to get this all sorted out. We're still not going to see it for 5 to 7 weeks. And my fingers are crossed that by the time, you know, we are actually ready to go in September, I actually have passports in hand. Because if we don't, well, I'm out of luck.
So in Egypt, you're going to be researching, trying to uncover the secrets of the Anunnaki and all of this stuff.
Hey, I went through the Anunnaki thing. I went through that, and perhaps we could talk about that at some point as well. I'm speaking with my friend Hrvoje Morić. He's also a fellow host here on TNT, and he has a great podcast called Geopolitics and Empire. We're going to take a quick break. This is TNT. My program is Deprogram. My name is Michael. We'll be right back.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
This is a very interesting way of enslaving a lot of people. They just deem something illegal. They just put you into the red zone. They say that you're now a biohazard. You might not be able to fly because you've exceeded your carbon emissions limit. What really worries me here is that there's this weird kind of outsourcing of individual intelligence to centralized intelligence. And I cannot see the upsides to this other than really, really good marketing. And it's quite scary. Do you agree with me on my assessment about the dangers of digital ID and central intelligence?
Absolutely, yeah. In our magazine, you know, Covert Action Magazine is devoted to exposing, you know, providing, you know, scrutiny and exposure of the abuses of intelligence agencies. And this is, you know, a worldwide phenomenon that, you know, George Orwell would be rolling his grave at what's going on today.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Deprogram, second hour. I'm speaking with my fellow TNT host, Hrvoje Morić. His show comes on in the afternoons here on the West Coast. And, Hrvoje, just to tie off on your remark about the Anunnaki, and I'll be straight up with folks. I got really into that at one point. And as a kid, I mean, I started reading Eric von Daniken in like the fourth grade. And so I was fascinated by these ideas. Now I'm more of the opinions disposed by guys like Graham Hancock, who's a big hero of mine. I think that this is a period of human history that is erased from our annals, and that we have vast potential that's been hidden from us. But regardless, yes, I have a fascination with all the ancient sacred sites. I would love to come to Mexico and see the pyramids there. I would love to go down to Peru and Bolivia at some point in my life. These are all bucket list items for me. So I'm fascinated by that. I'm not discounting aliens. As a matter of fact, I think that aliens probably do exist and almost probably have come here. That said, I think that we human beings created these monuments. And so going to go see those in September. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I don't know too much about all of that stuff as much as you, which you've been doing that with your work for many years. I kind of stick to the biblical explanation, but that still doesn't rule out, you know, if you look at Genesis and the Old Testament, there's talk about, you know, Nephilim giants, you know,
yes,
the fallen angels who mated with women on, you know, humans, and then giant. I believe that there were these giants, and it was probably them that created, you know, in my opinion, without, you know, having done this deep research, it just seems logical that these giants, half-breeds, probably created the pyramids and these other things. And so, and that's probably where, you know, you got Greek mythology and a lot of this other stuff. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, it's my coffee. But I'm not saying that didn't happen. It's just when you mentioned the Anunnaki, I wanted to, because I got into Sitchin very heavily, and then when people were criticizing Sitchin, I got all bent out of shape about it. But the more I've come to it, actually, the more I know, the less I know, right? And that's what I do know is, like, I have a lot to learn, and regardless of how these things came to be, what I do know is incredible geodetic information is encoded into all of these monuments. And however it was done, either by us solely, done by us with the help of beings from wherever, what's encoded in these monuments is a testament to knowledge that basically we knew where we were in the solar system, our distance to the sun, to the moon, the circumference of the planet. I mean, they did all of this to let us know that they knew these things. So I'm fascinated by that, but I love to travel. But speaking of Mexico, for the people that have listened to this show that haven't heard your show yet, you are an American expatriate. You've lived all over the world. You now currently live in Mexico. Tell us how and why that came about.
Well, I mean, the simple thing is I came like 12 years ago, over 12 years ago now. I was just offered a job, simply. I'm just kind of the person where I want to experience the world, and I want to experience other cultures. I don't like going to a place for 1 or 2 weeks. I like to go there for like months or a year or more and really absorb the foreign culture, you know, and put myself in the shoes of the other. And so I got offered the job to teach at the top university high school in Mexico, 2010. And I just took it. You know, I thought, who doesn't want to learn Spanish? The Mexican food is great. Everyone knows.
For sure.
The weather is great. The women are pretty. You know, yep. I married one. And so I thought, come here for a year. Yeah, well, I come here for a year or two, and 1 year becomes two, becomes five, becomes 10. And next thing you know, you put your roots down, buy a house, become nationalized Mexican or Spanish, all of that, and grow a Mexican mustache, and and then you know, the whole COVID thing hits, and then everyone starts fleeing to Mexico. I was just in the right place already, and so many people fleeing here to Mexico. I think yesterday or the day before, I was talking to a Canadian pastor, Henry Hildebrandt, who had been in the news over the last 2 years for them trying to fine him and shut down his church. He happened to be born in Mexico. So he's a Canadian Mexican citizen. And so, yeah, that's how I ended up here.
And which state are you in? I don't want you to have to divulge any information you don't want to, but
Jalisco. I'm in the second biggest city after Mexico City, which is Guadalajara.
And what's the population of that city?
I have to double check all the time. I mean, I think they calculate that the entire metropolitan area is above 5 million. So something like upwards of 5 million. You know, Mexico City is like 25 million or something.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. So Mexico City, I was thinking, was at least 22 million. Speaking of Mexico and Central America and South America, so a week or so ago, maybe it's been 2 weeks now, we had this thing, and I keep my ear to the ground, Voyer, and it's like, this piqued my interest. So we had this thing in Los Angeles called the Summit of the Americas. And I'll be honest, I mean, I know most of these big summits that they had, the Davos crowd kind of stuff, but I was like, the Summit of the Americas, I've never heard of this. And the way that I found out about it was they started coming on television on the news in LA saying, LA residents, just know that starting Monday through Friday of this particular week, we're going to be closing off these various streets around LA because we're having this big multinational summit in downtown Los Angeles called the Summit of the Americas. And I was like, well, I've never ever, had you heard of this?
I hadn't kept really much up to date with it, but the first time since 1994 that it was held in the U.S.
Precisely.
like half of the Americas, a bunch of countries were not invited, like Cuba and Venezuela, and then many other countries. Mexico's AMLO said he's not going. Salvador's Nayib Bukele said screw that. Nicaragua, I don't remember if it was, they were not invited. Honduras jumped on the bandwagon and said so many countries like, and it makes sense, like whether whatever political ideology you are, it's like, well, yeah, if it's the summit of Americas and like a quarter or more are not invited, then there's not a summit of Americas and it's a tool of the U.S. empire. And so I think it turned out to be kind of a failure. Like it was bad, you know, for the United States. I think it was even put together poorly by the Biden administration. And so, yeah, not really.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the Biden administration put something together poorly?
Uh-oh, now I'm going to get in trouble with the DHS again.
I kid, but no, I brought this up for the exact points that you just made. So first of all, I never heard of it, and I think I'm reasonably on the ball. So you're right. I think that it started in the early 90s, and the first one was in Miami during the Clinton administration. This was the first time since then it was going to be in the U.S. And yes, right off the bat, we say, okay, Cuba can't come, Venezuela can't come. So then you have other countries, most notably to me, Mexico, said, all right, well, we're not coming. So to me, you're saying you're going to have a summit of the Americas, but our closest neighbor besides Canada are not coming, then what's the point? And I think that it was just a cheerleading, you know, photo op thing. Now, it did cause a big pain in the butt here in LA, because I was downtown one of those days, which was also the day that one of those Osprey aircraft went down in the desert, which was super weird because I saw them flying over LA. Well, I was downtown to pick up one of my daughters who was taking a bus back from San Diego. So I'm down there. One of these Ospreys that are, I just bring this up because it all happened the same day. I thought it was very odd. One of these Osprey aircraft, which has the tilt rotors on it, had gone down out in the desert. And this was like an hour and a half before I saw the ones over LA. I don't know what they were all up to. But anyway, so while we're down there, they start shutting off on ramps and exit ramps on all the major freeways around LA. It was a big pain in the butt. But the main thing is, at the end of the day, you know, they brought in Biden, they brought in Kamala. It was a big dog and pony show. I don't know that they accomplished anything. Oh, and then I think they had Trudeau there. I think that Gavin Newsom and Trudeau made some kind of, you know, green climate agenda kind of thing together, and they were focused and they were photographed together. And I don't know, the whole thing was just a photo op, it looks to me like.
I would agree. And just on a slightly, well, related note, another piece of information that was interesting, I don't know if you saw that about the World Cup, that it's going to the 2026 World Cup is going to be held in, not in one country, but in North America. They're going to have matches in Canada, USA, and Mexico. The three biggest cities in Mexico, Mexico City, here in Guadalajara, and Monterrey, which is the third biggest city. And right off the bat, I'm like, I know what's going on. You know, why isn't it being held in one country?
Right.
It's being held in three in North America. And was it the FIFA president said, Gianni Infantino said, 2026 will be much, much bigger than 1994. I think this part of the world doesn't realize what will happen here in 2026. The world will be invading Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And if you ask me, if I put on my tinfoil hat, this has everything to do with the North American Union. I have been studying for over a decade in depth the North American Union, the plan, the integration plan, the white papers. I had the last interview with the father of the North American Union, Council on Foreign Relations member, Dr. Robert Pastor. I've seen him in person. He would visit the campus here. And I interviewed him December 2013. He passed January 2014 of cancer. But his book, North American Community, his white paper for Council on Foreign Relations, you know, same deal. And basically, I mean, you need economic integration, political and cultural, social, cultural. And they talk about these things in their papers. And so you need to sort of break down those nationalist cultural boundaries in Canada and US and Mexico. and move it towards more supranational, yep, globalist. And for me, if you ask me, that's the principal point of holding it in North America in 2026, is to get Mexicans, Canadians, and Americans more this idea of not being Mexican or American or Canadian, but North American. And in fact, that's what Robert Passer and his colleague would say when they came here to speak at the University of Mexico. They'd ask you, who here is in the U.S. citizen, American? You know, a few students raised their hands. Who's Mexican? Who's Canadian? It's like, no, you're not. You're all North Americans. So this was like a decade ago. They're promoting this idea. You're not like in Europe today. It's like you're a European Union citizen. So I don't know. That's just fascinating what's going on.
Hervoye, I think you probably called it exactly right, because you use the guise of entertainment and sport and music and things like this to kind of get people used to these ideas. And I mean, you look at the EU and I was on Joseph Arthur's show last night, and he asked me if I was, we were talking about you as well. Cause I said, you know, in the past, you know, I've been on your show and you've asked me various things. And I said that, you know, I was optimistic, and I don't want to say that I'm optimistic in a completely naive way. There's things that I'm not optimistic about. I'm optimistic for the human spirit. I'm not optimistic for the United States of America. And what you just described is why, because there's a, you know, you and I've had this discussion before. It's like, this seems like a long arc towards the eventual dissolution of the US. And that makes me sad, because I'm old fashioned and I believe in the Constitution. I believed in this great experiment. But no, I think, you know, they're playing a long game here, and that's where we're headed. And I think you probably dialed it in just right. That 2026 World Cup will be a great introduction of everybody. Hey, we're all in the big tent together. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm also, like you said, pessimistic. I have guests on frequently on TNT, as well as Geopolitics and Empire, that maybe are more optimistic that the United States is more resilient. And I have to agree, in terms of like, it is a powerhouse economically, militarily, politically. So it would take a lot. I think it's still going to take a lot. It's like a beast that you're, you know, a thousand cuts, you're going at it.
Yes.
But it will not be easy to take down the United States. Nonetheless, we're seeing these trends, as you said. They're playing the long game. That's the thing. It's a long game. Most people are not paying attention to it because it's such a slower long-term process. So yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a radical, you know, thing that happens in the course of 1 year. It's that death by a thousand cuts. It just happens over time. I mean, you know, and here again, I'm a broken record player, or whatever the old saying is. It's like, I mean, all you have to do is look at the complete degradation that cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco and Detroit, Chicago have fallen into. It's like, basically there's areas that are just completely non-functional, or there's a portion of the society within that have just fallen through the cracks. So it's, you know, it doesn't have to be this big invasion by the army of China or something like that. It's just when things just start falling apart and people become complacent over time, that allows you to be absorbed into something else.
Well, you just reminded me about one of the aspects, the key aspects of their long game. When you talk about regionalism, regional integration, the EU is the model, right? That's the, yep, blueprint for world.
And that's worked
government
out so well.
Right. Yeah. But they want basically all the regions of the world to be in these regional unions, like something like, yep, 10 or whatever. And that's the foundation. That then you have world government. They said that at the World Government Summit, the head of the Atlantic Council, basically, he said that like a month ago at the World Government Summit in, where was it, in UAE, I think. But my point is, one of the obstacles to the North American Union, and this is exactly what's played out in the EU, that you need to have the different national the countries need to economically be all, you know, kind of on the same level. And so the problem, mm-hmm, is when you have Canada and US are much wealthier and Mexico is not as wealthy, that's one of the you know, technical problems for forming this union. And exactly what you're pointing out is the Mexican standard of living is slightly increasing, while the US is slightly decreasing. And I think that's intentional, because they need to meet somewhere closer to a midpoint. And when that happens, then they can go forward fully with the North American Union. So it's like this third worldization of America. As you said, you're seeing it in the cities, in the passport processes. You know, here in Mexico, you know, we have pretty good infrastructure in, you know, when you talk about water, electricity, internet. My internet's fast, and you're seeing in America that sort of stuff declining. And so I think that's all intentional.
Hervoye, before we go to the break, I'm going to tell you a quick story that happened last week. There's a town in West Texas called Odessa. My grandmother was there. I worked in the oil field there in my teens and early 20s. Anyway, it's a pretty arid place. Anyway, so they've got massive heat in Texas right now. Last week, I think it was a week ago, on a Monday afternoon, they had a water main break in that city. Okay, so this is a town of 120, 130,000 people, and then another 30,000 people in the outlanding areas. It's actually a twin cities, Odessa, Midland, but that's another thing because the Bushes were a big in Midland for a bit, but that's for another show. But anyway, so this water main breaks in West Texas, 160,000 people, 100 degree plus heat, and these people were without water for well over 72 hours. And I just bring that up because this is the type of infrastructure black swan event that could happen in a lot of different places. It happened in the U.S. and people went without water, and there's nothing more crucial to people than water. But just an example. So this is TNT. I speak with my friend Hervoye Morich, a fellow host here on the network. And this is the program. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The latest research by Redfield and Wilton Strategies, released on the 17th of June, finds that the economy is on the top of mind for midterm voters. The survey asks respondents which issues are most likely to determine how you vote in the November midterm election. Respondents were asked to select their top three issues, and the economy topped the list, with 61% identifying it as a top issue. No other issues were close. Healthcare arrived at a distant second, with 31% placing it among the top issues. Abortion hit third at 27%, followed by immigration at 22%. It's notable that foreign policy and defence only came in at 10%. Because the United States' economic woes, to a large extent, have been a product of the military-industrial complex and disastrous foreign interventions. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Hello?
Yes, police, fire, or ambulance.
It's my friend.
I love you, please. Okay, look, I need you to stay on the phone. Oh, just stay on the phone.
You're getting blown away.
Okay, now hang on. Oh.
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. So please, stay on the line and you'll get help faster.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is Deep Program, and my name is Michael Parker. I'm speaking with Hervoye Morich, who also has a show later in the day. Hervoye, in this final segment, I want to pick your brain a little bit. What's on your radar right now? What is, tell us some of the things that you're interested in at the moment, besides these larger mega trends that we're talking about, but what else is, do my folks need to know about from your point of view?
Well, a number of things. You know, my biggest thing is always this coming digital social credit system, but other things that are kind of freaking me out is the development of the war in Ukraine, but principally the thing I think people have heard of now, the Kaliningrad situation. That's that little section that's separated from Russia. You know, that's the result of World War II, but it's between Kaliningrad, you've got Lithuania and Latvia, and then you get Russia, and Lithuania has shut the transport corridor, you know, because Russia is sending to its separated territory all of the goods that it needs, you know, food, building materials. And this is basically like a shot across the bow by the EU and Lithuania to, you're now meddling in internal affairs of sovereignty. I mean, that's like America telling Russia, you know, you can't telling them what to do within Russia and blocking them from doing stuff within Russia. And so this could potentially, freaks me out, could lead to an expansion of the war, and almost like a, you know, like a World War One, World War Two scenario, where you just, you know, Russia's doing a special operation in eastern part of Ukraine, and then one thing leads to another, and next thing you know, there's fighting in Lithuania and Kaliningrad, and then Moldova and Poland, and then all hell breaks loose, and we're World War Three. So, anyways, that's one thing that's kind
precisely.
Of
precisely. Well, I let me just throw one thing in there. One of my guests on Monday, we started talking about that. He has a website, another aggregator called The Duke Report. He's a buddy of mine, Peter Duke. And we were talking about that because he was featuring an article by a guy named Larry Johnson, who I think might have been the first person to kind of cover that. He put it in exactly the terms that you're putting it in, is like, did Lithuania just accidentally get us in this world war? But you and I, since we've been talking for a couple of years now, have argued that in some ways, we're already in this world war, but this makes it even more certain to happen. And it's like, you can't poke the bear much harder than this. So it bothers me as well, but proceed.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think that's Larry C. Johnson. I think he's former CIA or something. Yeah, I've tried to get him on. He didn't respond to me. Maybe I got to try again. But So there's that situation. I don't think this war is going to end anytime soon. And it's either it's going to drag on. And again, one of the purposes, it's just really strange how it's to the T fulfilling the plan, you know, phase two of the Great Reset, because the consequences are impoverishment of Europe and Europeans. It's because if we just take a step back, what's the plan of, you know, COVID 1984, Great Reset, all of this is to wipe out the middle class and bring us back to a neo-feudalism, a neo-techno-feudalism, and to wipe out the middle class across the world. But they don't really care, I think, at the moment so much about the third world, the developing world, because there's not a strong middle class, right, in the developing world. It's already got problems with being poor, so who cares about them? They're already poor. Let's focus on the developed world, you know, Canada, Five Eyes countries, Europe, US. And what are they doing in Europe? Wiping out the middle class. So it's going to be only like the Middle Ages, the nobility, the rich, the oligarchy, and everyone else is poor, because, you know, gas prices are like, they're paying like double the gas prices than what you have in the US and here in Mexico. I've talked to people in Europe, like food prices, energy prices, it's nuts. So that's really strange how that is going about, you know. And is Putin in on the WEF plan, or is it more like game theory where they provoked, you know, the West is playing game theory where they provoke Putin into Ukraine and he had to go just to defend Russia. And as a result, they get, you know, that consequence that they wanted, which was to impoverish Europe. I don't know. So, yeah.
Well, the thing with Putin, and I got in quite a few arguments about this early on, I was trying to just put it as politely as possible, but already the full court press was, you know, Putin is mad. And I'm not defending what he did, but to kind of ignore the orchestration of this on many levels, I don't know. I don't see any other way to look at it other than he had an opportunity. First of all, Biden's in power and terrible. And at the same time, we're prodding him. NATO's prodding him. EU's prodding him. The US is prodding him. And he moved into Ukraine, and now we've got this issue, and it's whirling out of control. As far as him being a member of the WEF, I mean, I guess he was one of the, what's the term I'm looking for? One of the young
global leaders or something.
Young global leaders. And I think you and I maybe have discussed this before. It's like, I also wonder some of these global leaders that are part of the WEF, at what level their participation is sincere, or if they're there to network. But regardless, at the end of the day, it's kind of working out into the situation that is what the World Economic Forum essentially wanted, which was the Great Reset. So regardless how it happens, it's happening.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be a member of the Young Global Leaders. But you know, my point was, is he with this elite? Because every country's got its ruling oligarchy. You
sure.
Know, the Russians have their elite. The Chinese have their elite. And I don't think they really are friends of their own populations. But you know, another thing also that's kind of freaking me out, I want to go back home this summer to Croatia. So there's a mm-hmm. window of opportunity. Restrictions have been removed in a number of countries. So I believe I can make my way to Europe without doing a PCR test or taking a DARPA gene therapy injection. So I'm hoping to that. I'm also afraid if they actually tomorrow, Tedros, the terrorist of the World Unhealthy Organization, he's going to declare if monkeypox is an emergency. But what if they shut us down again tomorrow? It's just never ending. And as you said, polio. I just read right now, as we were speaking, Spain has detected its first local infection with cholera since 1979. Oh, what do you know? The permanent biosecurity state. You know, they just need to justify the permanent biosecurity state. And so, you know, if I get locked down in Croatia and I can't return to Mexico, so be it. So anyways, there's that. And then the economic issues, the insane inflation, you know, the prices, they don't have enough pilots. Some of them are being maimed by these vaccines. Others are just in Texas. I think now there's a bunch that are protesting. They're overworked because there's staff shortages. There's not enough. They're not being paid enough. And then as well, I read yesterday that America Airlines was shutting down flights permanently to a number of cities in America.
Three cities, like Toledo, Ohio, Ithaca, New York, and another one in New York. Yeah, they've got a shortage. You and I are absolutely on the same page, because there's my sister traveled to Montreal last weekend for the Formula One race up there. There's a band from Texas that I love called Crunchmen. They were in Spain or Iberia. In both cases, both that band and my sister, their luggage gets lost. Same weekend that we're seeing, if you go look for these pictures online, hundreds, if not thousands, of baggage in like Heathrow. And I mean, the airline industry infrastructure is falling apart. And one person in Edinburgh, Scotland, even photographed a pilot loading baggage onto the plane that he was about to fly.
Yeah, I think this is part of the, again, what we were saying earlier, this is part of the Great Reset. They don't want you, as they say, you will own nothing. You will not. I'm now modifying it. You will own nothing. You won't be going anywhere, and you won't complain about it. Because if you complain about it, like what happened to me, PayPal taken off of PayPal, your social media canceled, you're penalized in the social credit system. So you will not be complaining about it.
You will inhabit a cube and live in the metaverse,
and eat bugs. I mean, that's another thing. In Canada, it was reported recently, they just opened in May, a month ago, a new production facility for insect feed protein that's going to be used in all of North America, Canada, and US for consumption for people in the food industry, for, you know, crickets and all of this stuff. So I'm like, it's not a joke. Like, it's literally right before our eyes. It's everything's coming true, all of the conspiracy theories, and more people are like, yeah, you're not crazy. Yeah, I get what's going on now. And so
people don't say that to me yet, but and nobody says, oh, Michael, you were right. But and the deal is, I laugh sometimes, especially when I speak to people that I like Carvoyer, because at some point I'm just like, oh my God. I mean, the realization of this is so just absolutely insane that I have to laugh just to stay sane. Carvoyer, we're up against the end of the hour. Thank you so much for coming on today. Who do you have on tap today? And tell everybody how they hear you and where they find you on the net.
Yeah, I've got Ricky Varandas coming on from the Ripple Effect podcast, who's great. Ken Kaufman of Stairway Press Publishers, and Spike Cohen, the libertarian activist. Yep. I think he ran in 2020. And I still got to upload my Geopolitics and Empire interview with Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who also ran for political office. He's escaped to Montana. Yeah, best place to find me is geopoliticsandempire.com, as well as here on TNT Radio, tntradio.live.
Carvoyer, you're doing great work. I'm glad that we've become friends, and I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today.
It's been fantastic. I love being deprogrammed. You know, anytime you need me on again, I'll be here.
All right. Wonderful. Well, this has been fun. And like I say, I don't think either one of us are morning guys, but somehow this went really well and I thoroughly enjoyed it. We're going to take a break. I'll be back here in a minute. And you're listening to TNT. This is Deprogram. I'm going to be joined by another TNT host in just a moment, Joseph Olson. It'll be his first time to be on the show. I'm looking forward to that as well. If you are looking for me on social media, I can be found on several of them. Michael Parker, LA, especially on Twitter, weirdly enough. They haven't thrown me off yet. Michael Parker, LA, Minds, Gab, Getter, Parler. I'm out there. Look me up. This is Deprogram TNT. We'll be right back.